Chapter 40. Van was lying in his netted nest under the liriodendrons, reading Antityrannus on Ratner. His knee had troubled him all night. Now, after lunch, it seemed a bit better. Ada had gone on horseback to Lador, where he hoped she would forget to buy the messy turpentine oil Marina had told her to bring him. His valet advanced toward him across the lawn, followed by a messenger, a slender youth clad in black leather from neck to ankle, chestnut curls escaping from under a visored cap. The strange child glanced around with an amateur thespian's exaggeration of attitude and handed a letter marked confidential to Van. Dear Veen, in a couple of days I must leave for a spell of military service abroad. If you desire to see me before I go, I shall be glad to entertain you, and any other gentleman you might wish to bring along, at dawn tomorrow, where the Maidenhair Road crosses Tourbière Lane. If not, I beg you to confirm in a brief note that you bear me no grudge, just as no grudge is cherished in regard to you, sir, by your obedient servant, Percy Dupré. No, Van did not desire to see the Count. He said so to the pretty messenger, who stood with one hand on the hip and one knee turned out like an extra, waiting for the signal to join the gambadeurs in the country dance after Calabro's aria. "Au moment," added Van, "I would be interested to know, if this could be decided in a jiffy behind that tree, what you are, stable boy or kennel girl?" The messenger did not reply and was led away by the chuckling boot. A little squeal, suggestive of an improper pinch, came from behind the laurels screening their exit. It was hard to decide whether that clumsy and pretentious missive had been dictated by the fear that one's sailing off to fight for one's country might be construed as running away from more private engagements, or whether its conciliatory gist had been demanded from Percy by somebody. Perhaps a woman. For instance, his mother, born Praskovya Lanskoy. Anyway, Van's honor remained unaffected. He limped to the nearest garbage can, and having burnt the letter with its crested blue envelope, dismissed the incident from his mind, merely noting that now, at least, Ada would cease to be pestered by the fellow's attentions. She returned late in the afternoon, without the embrocation, thank goodness. He was still lolling in his low-slung hammock, looking rather forlorn and sulky, but having glanced around with more natural grace than the brown-locked messenger had achieved, she raised her veil, kneeled down by him, and soothed him. When lightning struck, 2 days later, an old image that is meant to intimate a flashback to an old barn, Van became aware that it brought together, in livid confrontation, two secret witnesses. They had been hanging back in his mind since the first day of his fateful return to Ardis. One had been murmuring with averted gaze that Percy Dupré was, and would always be, only a dance partner, a frivolous follower. The other had kept insinuating, with spectral insistence, that some nameless trouble was threatening the very sanity of Van's pale, faithless mistress. On the morning of the day preceding the most miserable one in his life, he found he could bend his leg without wincing. But he made the mistake of joining Ada and Lucette in an impromptu lunch on a long-neglected croquet lawn and walked home with difficulty. A swim in the pool and a soak in the sun helped, however, and the pain had practically gone when, in the mellow heat of the long afternoon, Ada returned from one of her long brambles, as she called her botanical rambles, succinctly and somewhat sadly, for the florula had ceased to yield much beyond the familiar favorites. Marina, in a luxurious peignoir with a large oval mirror hinged before her, sat at a white toilet table that had been carried out onto the lawn where she was having her hair dressed by senile but still wonder-working Monsieur Violette of Lyon and Lador, an unusual outdoor activity which she explained and excused by the fact of her grandmother's having also liked con la coiffe au grand air, so as to forestall the zephyrs as a duelist steadies his hand by walking about with a poker. "That's our best performer," she said, indicating Van to Violette, who mistook him for Pedro, and bowed with un air entendu. Van had been looking forward to a little walk of convalescence with Ada before dressing for dinner, but she said, as she drooped on a garden chair, that she was exhausted and filthy and had to wash her face and feet and prepare for the ordeal of helping her mother entertain the movie people who were expected later in the evening.
"I've seen him in Sexico," murmured Monsieur Violette to Marina,
whose ears he had shut with both hands as he moved the reflection of her head in the glass this way and that.
"No, it's getting late," muttered Ada. "And moreover, I promised Lucette,"
he insisted in a fierce whisper, fully knowing, however, how useless it was to attempt to make her change her mind, particularly in amorous matters. But unaccountably and marvelously, her dazed look melted into one of gentle glee, as if in sudden perception of newfound release. Thus a child may stare into space with a dawning smile upon realizing that the bad dream is over, or that a door has been left unlocked, and that one can paddle with impunity in thawed sky. Ada rid her shoulder of the collecting satchel and, under Violette's benevolent gaze, following them over Marina's mirrored head, they strolled away and sought the comparative seclusion of the park alley, where she had once demonstrated to him her sun and shade games. He held her and kissed her, and kissed her again as if she had returned from a long and perilous journey. The sweetness of her smile was something quite unexpected and special. It was not the sly demon smile of remembered or promised ardor, but the exquisite human glow of happiness and helplessness. All their passionate pump joy exertions, from burning barn to Burnberry Brook, were nothing in comparison to this zaychik, this sun blick of the smiling spirit. Her black jumper and black skirt with apron pockets lost its "in mourning for a lost flower," meaning that Marina had fancifully attached to her dress "Nemedlina periodizia," "change immediately," she had yelped into the green shimmering looking glass. Instead, it had acquired the charm of a Liaskan old-fashioned schoolgirl uniform. They stood brow to brow, brown to white, black to black, he supporting her elbows, she playing her limp, light fingers over his collarbone. And how he l'adored, he said, the dark aroma of her hair blending with crushed lily stalks, Turkish cigarettes, and the lassitude that comes from lass.
"No, no, don't," she said. "I must wash. Quick, quick. Ada must wash."
But for yet another immortal moment, they stood embraced in the hushed avenue, enjoying, as they had never enjoyed before, the happy forever feeling at the end of never-ending fairy tales.
"That's a beautiful passage, Van. I shall cry all night."
Late interpolation. As a last sunbeam struck Ada, her mouth and chin shone drenched with his poor, futile kisses. She shook her head, saying they must really part, and she kissed his hands as she did only in moments of supreme tenderness, and then quickly turned away. And they really parted. One common orchid, a lady's slipper, was all that wilted in the satchel which she had left on a garden table and now dragged upstairs. Marina and the mirror had gone. He peeled off his training togs and took one last dip in the pool, over which the butler stood, looking meditatively into the false blue water with his hands behind his back.
"I wonder," he said, "if I haven't just seen a tadpole."
The novelistic theme of written communications has now really gotten into its stride. When Van went up to his room, he noticed, with a shock of grim premonition, a slip of paper sticking out of the heart pocket of his dinner jacket. Penciled in a large hand, with the contour of every letter deliberately whiffled and rippled, was the anonymous injunction,
"One must not burn you."
Only a French-speaking person would use that word for dupe. Among the servants, 15 at least were of French extraction, descendants of immigrants who had settled in America after England had annexed their beautiful and unfortunate country in 1815. To interview them all, torture the males, rape the females would be, of course, absurd and degrading. With a puerile wrench, he broke his best black butterfly on the wheel of his exasperation. The pain from the fang bite was now reaching his heart. He found another tie, finished dressing, and went to look for Ada. He found both girls and their governess in one of the nursery parlors, a delightful sitting room with a balcony, on which Mademoiselle La Riviere was sitting at a charmingly ornamented Pembroke table, and reading with mixed feelings and furious annotations the third shooting script of Les Enfants Maudits. At a larger round table in the middle of the inner room, Lucette, under Ada's direction, was trying to learn to draw flowers. Several botanical atlases, large and small, were lying about. Everything appeared as it always used to be, the little nymphs and goats on the painted ceiling, the mellow light of the day ripening into evening, the remote dreamy rhythm of Blanche's linen-folding voice humming Marlborough, Ne sais quand reviendra, ne sais quand reviendra, and the two lovely heads, bronze black and copper red, inclined over the table. Vaughn realized that he must simmer down before consulting Ada, or indeed before telling her he wished to consult her. She looked gay and elegant. She was wearing his diamonds for the first time. She had put on a new evening dress with jet gleams and, also for the first time, transparent silk stockings. He sat down on a little sofa, took at random one of the open volumes and stared in disgust at a group of brilliantly pictured gross orchids whose popularity with bees depended, said the text, on various attractive odors, ranging from the smell of dead workers to that of a tomcat. Dead soldiers might smell even better. In the meantime, obstinate Lucette kept insisting that the easiest way to draw a flower was to place a sheet of transparent paper over the picture, in the present case a red-bearded pagonia, with indecent details of structure, a plant peculiar to the Ladoga bogs, and trace the outline of the thing in colored inks. Patiently, Ada wanted her to copy not mechanically, but from eye to hand and from hand to eye, and to use for a model a live specimen of another orchid that had a brown wrinkled pouch and purple sepals. But after a while she gave in cheerfully and set aside the crystal vaselette holding the lady's slipper she had picked. Casually, lightly, she went on to explain how the organs of orchids work. But all Lucette wanted to know after her whimsical fashion was, could a boy bee impregnate a girl flower through something? Through his gaiters or woolies or whatever he wore? You know, said Ada in a comic nasal voice, turning to Vaughn, you know, that child has the dirtiest mind imaginable. And now she is going to be mad at me for saying this and sob on the La Riviere bosom and complain she has been pollinated by sitting on your knee. But I can't speak to Belle about dirty things, said Lucette quite gently and reasonably. What's the matter with you, Vaughn? Inquired sharp-eyed Ada.
Why do you ask? Inquired Vaughn in his turn.
Your ears wiggle and you clear your throat.
Are you through with those horrible flowers?
Yes. I'm now going to wash my hands. We'll meet downstairs. Your tie is all crooked.
All right, said Vaughn.
Mon page, mon beau page, Mironton, Mironton, Mironten, mon page, mon beau page.
Downstairs, Jones was already taking down the dinner gong from its hook in the hall. Well, what's the matter? She asked when they met a minute later on the drawing room terrace.
I found this in my jacket, said Vaughn.
Rubbing her big front teeth with a nervous forefinger, Ada read and reread the note. How do you know it's meant for you? She asked, giving him back the bit of copybook paper.
Well, I'm telling you! He yelled.
Tisha! Quiet, said Ada.
I'm telling you, I found it here!
Pointing at his heart. Destroy and forget, said Ada.
Your obedient servant!
replied Vaughn.